I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, send your question in for Wade Smith, 713-572-4610 on the text line. We're going to go around the league with Wade on a Football Friday. Wade, I want to start out with something I wrote for SportsRadio610.com. I titled it The Curious Case of El Guapo. When you see Carlos Hyde still on the market and the report from Aaron Wilson that the Texans actually late in the season offered him a 2-year, $10 million deal, what do you make of that?
You make of a guy that overplayed his hand, man. When you got to think about it, he ends up having a 1,000-yard season, so he thinks he's going to hit it big on the free agent market. You know, he hasn't had any really big deals in his career, and so he's going to try to parlay that 1,000-yard season into a big contract, and it just didn't work out for him. And then you had a coronavirus hit. I know that didn't help him at all. So, you know, Carlos Hyde is a good football player, but he's a product of a guy that had bad timing. A lot of times in the NFL, when it comes to the NFL and getting big contracts, a lot of that has to do with timing, and he had some bad one on this particular situation.
I agree with you on the Hyde perspective. Obviously, he'd like to have that back. But I'm looking at it even from like an organizational standpoint with the Texans, in that, you know, there's been skepticism and there's been talks about Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby in the front office not really having a grasp of the markets. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to play out. But to me, I look at this and I look at it in multiple ways. First of all, I think this is clear, tangible proof of misjudging the market. And second of all, it makes me wonder, was David Johnson a backup plan? Did you fall in love with him during the process? Like, what exactly am I supposed to think from that? I think there's just so much to look at from like a Texans perspective as well, outside of what you just said about Hyde.
Well, if you look at it from a Texans perspective, you're going to get confused, because a lot of the decision-making process, it didn't go like A to B to C. It, you know, the deal to get David Johnson here and let DeAndre Hopkins go, that wasn't because I want to do this, I'm going to get David Johnson back in return, and that makes sense. That move in itself didn't make sense. I think it was more of, hey, we got to get Hop out of here because we don't want to pay him, and he wants to get paid, and we're not willing to mess around with it, so we just gonna get him out of here. And you know what? They got this David Johnson guy, and they offered him to us, and he's a good player. So, hey, we'll incorporate that contract and get him in here because we got to get Hop out of here. I don't look at it like, you know what, going into the offseason, that was the guy that the Texans targeted. Like, we got to get David Johnson. Because to me, that wouldn't make sense, because if that was the case, you would have known that, hey, this dude is probably going to get released anyway, and you could have paid him once he came off the market. So it's going to be very difficult for you to try to rationalize the thought process behind it. But I do know that since they're in it now, they've made that decision that we're going to accept that $10 million contract now, and they're going to ride David Johnson to the wheels fall off. And so, you know, from that perspective, they're going to try to get their money's worth out of David Johnson. It's just unfortunate for Carlos Hyde, because the rest of the market is not in – I mean, they're not on the same page of what he thinks he should get. He's probably going to end up having to sign another one-year deal and another prove-it deal, and hopefully he can make something happen in the near future for that, for his long-term success.
Hey, Wade, I want to talk to you about this new proposal on the late-game kickoffs or onside kickoffs. 4th and 15 from the 25-yard line. I actually love it, because I don't want to put – I'll put it this way. I'd rather put the game in my quarterback's hands, especially if that quarterback's name is Deshaun Watson, than a kicker. But I wanted to get your thoughts.
I don't think there's anything you can think about this whole scenario that's negative. I love everything about it. I love the idea of you putting the ball in the hand of your offense. I love the idea of the defense saying we're putting the ball in the hands of us. We have the opportunity to stop the ball to win a game as opposed to a fluke kick that bounces all over the place. To me, I'm not a special teams guy, man. I've been on the wrong end of a lot of missed kicks, a wrong end of a lot of just poor special teams plays that's cost my team ball game. So if anything that I can do to where it's going to be in the hands of the offense and the defense, I'm all for it. And that's a more exciting.
You're darn right it is. Good for you, Wade.
Everything about it. Are you not a fan of it, Landry?
Hell no. Why don't you just have penguins waddle across the field, and if Deshaun hits one of those penguins, you get an extra point too.
What are you talking about? This is
gimmicky XFL type stuff. We don't need this. We don't need to make comebacks easier. We don't need to do that, Wade.
It's putting it in the offense and the defense. I'm with you. And it's not XFL stuff, you know, with jumping through hoops and stuff. It's a football scrimmage play.
So this is the thing. It's XFL-ish, you might want to say. Remember the stuff that was taken from XFL originally and AFL back in the day when people looked at the AFL as a fluke league? If you're a smart business and the NFL is a monopoly, they're going to take ideas from other entities and incorporate them and make them their own sky cams, things of that nature that are part of the game that you would hate it if they weren't part of it. So to me, it's a hell of an idea. I love the idea of the kickoff that they do in XFL. If they were to incorporate that with the NFL, I would love that as well, where everybody's stationary and they start, you know, 15 yards apart or whatever it is. And you run down there and do the kickoff team like that. It helps with player safety, and it's a more exciting play. I love that. But I really love this whole idea of doing a 4th and 15, because percentage-wise, it's going to work out pretty similar to what it used to be with the onside kicks before they changed the rules for player safety.
Right.
But it's, like I said, you're putting it in the hands of your offense, or you're putting it in the hands of your defense, as opposed to a fluke kick to where the ball bounces funny and somebody that's been standing on the sideline all day chilling, they have to all of a sudden run out there on hands team and make a play.
Aaron Donald said that he does not like the idea of possibly playing without fans. He said fans are what causes him to step his game up and be one of the best defensive players in the NFL. He said it yesterday in a Zoom call with the LA media types. How do you feel as a former player about the possibility of playing without fans?
It would suck, but what's the alternative? Not play? You know what I mean? It's going to suck for those guys. It's going to feel weird. It's going to feel awkward. But at the same time, NFL players and professional athletes in general can figure out a way to adapt to any and every situation. That's just part of being a professional. And so those guys, initially, it's going to feel weird and it's going to feel awkward. But then you're going to get hit in the mouth, or you're going to hit somebody in the mouth, and you're going to feel like, oh, this is ball, and you're going to go out there and play. And at the end of the day, you want to put a product out there on the field so that fans can see. There's a lot of people, there's millions of people sitting around right now with nothing to escape from all of the negativity that you got going on around the country and around the world with the coronavirus, everything that has to do with it. People want to see sports. People want to get away. People want to see guys go out there and play. And so guys are going to complain, and I completely understand the complaining about it, understanding that it's going to be awkward, it's not going to be the same feeling. But the alternative is to not play, and that would be the worst. That's the worst possible scenario. That's kind of why I'm feeling so down on this whole situation with the Major League Baseball players and the owners not figuring out money-wise what's going to do there. They're going to mess around and screw up their league for years to come. So, you know, Aaron Donald, I get it, but he'll figure out how to play, and he'll still be getting his 9 to 12 sacks a year just like he did any other year.
NFL is looking at different ways to increase minority hires, and I'm all about it, and I've never had this discussion with you. I am not a fan of affirmative action or quotas or anything like making somebody hire something, but I think it's idiotic when someone doesn't even look their way. That's all. I just want someone to give me a chance. Just give me a chance to get in the room with you and talk, and then I'll prove on my own merit that I deserve the job. I want to get your thoughts on that and where this might land.
It's just a scenario where you want opportunities. If you have put forth the effort and you have the resume to get an opportunity, you should have that opportunity. The problem is that a lot of times owners of NFL teams, just professional teams in general, they will hire guys that they are comfortable with or guys that they identify with. And so when you look at the ownership of the NFL, there's only, I think, one, maybe one and a half minority. I think it's one minority owner. I think that's Khan and
Rashad Khan.
Right? That's the only that's the only minority owner. And so you got, you know, 30 guys that look at, they're going to mess with guys that they're comfortable with. That's just natural tendency for people to do, unless you make a conscious effort to make sure that you open up the playing field and you open up your eyes to a different way, a different perspective of approaching things. And so I like the fact that the NFL is trying to figure out ways to include everybody, but that whole idea of giving away draft picks and all that type of stuff, I thought that was foolish. And I'm glad that they're tabling that for the time being. They need to rethink that whole line of thinking, because if you're a coach, you for one want to have the respect of your players, and you want to have the respect of your peers. And if people say, if you get a job, because the way I look at it now, if you're a black coach in the NFL, you had to go through hoops to get to that spot.
Because even more respect.
Right. There's even more respect for you getting to that role, because you know that it wasn't necessarily a level playing field for you to get to where you're at. You know what I mean? And so now it completely counteracts that and swings the pendulum the opposite way when you say, all right, if I hire this coach, I'm going to get a couple of draft picks here or there. I just don't like the optics of that. It's just a bad look altogether. They can figure out, and I don't know the answer, but they can figure out a different way to go about it. I did like the fact that they were saying that you have to interview two candidates now, and including women in that. I like that idea of including women in that, just to make the league more diverse and reach out to a greater group of people. And giving people opportunities. If you're good enough to have the job, you should have the job. And so there's coaches out there that you like know damn well Eric Bieniemy should be a head coach in the NFL right now, but he's not. There's guys that we don't know about that should be head coaches or coordinators, but they don't get those opportunities for whatever reasons. You can have conjecture and you can use logic to figure out why they're not getting these opportunities, but you can't, unless you're in somebody's head, there's no way you can prove it. So the only thing you can do is try to figure out ways to get around that and get other guys opportunities. And that's what the NFL is trying to do, is just, I think they missed the mark with the whole draft pick thing.
Talking to Wade Smith here around the NFL on Sports Radio 610. We got a few questions from Loopholes on the text line for Wade. 9673 wants to know, what is the best TGIF show of all time? Were you a TGIF guy?
Oh, man, yeah.
Matters, Full House, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, Step by Step, Boy Meets World, The Hughleys.
Show?
Man, that's a great question, dog. That's a great question. I'm going to go with Full House, bro.
Yeah, it's there.
I'm going to go with Full House. Full House is the best one. Although Boys Meets World was up there, that's a damn good show.
Well, Family Matters.
I like Family Matters. Yeah,
Family Matters is up there.
With Mr. Cooper was underrated.
But that wasn't TGIF, was it?
Yeah.
I thought
93-94.
Like
93-94.
That came out on that was on WB. That was on my WB show. Well, maybe we. I don't remember that.
93-94 was there for sure.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah. Okay. That's
shout
tough.
Out to the WB.
I don't remember that.
How'd you feel about The Parenthood on WB?
Great show.
That was underrated.
Great show.
With Goo.
Great. That, like the whole WB lineup was money.
What do you think of a White Unicorn show from 2 to 6, Clinton's show? He threw out the term White Unicorn. I guess it's a white dude who can satisfy a girl that's been with only black dudes before. What do you think about the term White Unicorn?
That's what we said.
Well, first of all, I'm trying to figure out why the hell show came up with this.
He said that Clint is one of 75 white unicorns, along with Justin Timberlake, Channing Tatum, Travis Kelce, and a few other guys who can take girls back to the light side after being.
Oh,
with
like
mothers.
The whole once you go black, you go back.
Yeah,
go
they can
back,
they can squash
can,
that
you
myth.
Can get them back.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll put it like this. Clint can hang out with me, he can hang out with anybody. And so think, so can, I don't know about Travis Kelce. I guess he can. You know, his girl would let you know that he can, that he can. But if you can adapt to any situation, if you played AAU basketball, there's certain guys, Connor Barwin type of guys, that if you can adapt to any situation, women like that. And I think that a lot of white girls that deal with black dudes,
okay,
they like the fact that those black dudes can adapt to any situation. Okay. Because I can talk to you guys in a very articulate way,
yeah,
but then I can go around the way and talk on some other stuff, and they see both sides of that.
So you're kind of like a black Travis Kelce.
Whoa. No, I'm not like that at all.
Whoa.
I'm not like that at all. I'm not like that at all. But see, this is the thing. Travis Kelce does it because it's a choice.
Yeah.
We do that because it's necessary to make it in this world. You have to be able to adapt to your surroundings. So that's, it's a little bit different for Travis.
Well, see, I also feel my point on this is that, like, when I go back to my neighborhood in San Antonio where I grew up, I kind of develop a little bit of a, you know, kind of a barrio accent or whatever.
I've seen you at a Mexican restaurant.
That I grew up with. But at least I lived there. I mean, that was my culture.
Yeah.
And same thing with
just like how sometimes, you know, the black dudes will drop the N-word when they're around each other.
Yeah.
Essay flows out like crazy for Lopez.
No, but what
when
I'm
he's,
saying, Wade, but what I'm saying, like the white guy who does that never even had that in his background. You know, it's weird.
Not always. There's some white
well,
guys
true,
that
yeah.
grew up around a lot of black folks, and so they, you know, they feel comfortable. Now, don't get too comfortable because you might get punched for saying the wrong thing. That's what I always advise my buddies. Like, hey, don't get too comfortable because some people are not going to be cool with
that's
that.
That's right.
But, yeah, I mean, some guys, they just – like Owen Daniels is one of the coolest white dudes I ever met in my life. Dude has more Jordans than I've ever had. He wore a different pair of Jordans every day to training camp. He was wearing Jordans with training camp cleats. You know what I mean? That's the type of dude he grew up Chicago. He wasn't in the hood of Chicago, but he understood how to adapt to any situation. He was comfortable. That's the biggest thing. If you can be yourself around anybody,
yeah,
women like that. They enjoy that. And so Clint Sterner is Clint Sterner.
White unicorn.
Wherever he is, he ain't going to change who he is.
Yeah.
He can adapt the situation to where, all right, there's a bunch of country people around me, so I'm going to be on my country stuff. Or, oh, there's a bunch of people that like rap around me, I'm going to be on my rap stuff.
I think it was more of a bedroom thing that show was talking about. We'll play it
but
for
see,
you.
I'm not trying to get in the bedroom.
Right, well, that's right.
We'll play it for you. We also have people want to ask you questions. Questions are flowing in. So can we just keep you around for a segment and have a little ask Wade anything, and we'll give you some clarity to this white unicorn thing. I want to put you
no
on the
doubt.
Spot.
Let me hear what Show had to say.
All right.
Let me hear what Show had to say.
More with Wade coming up next. All right, let's ask Wade some questions here. Ocho wants to know, Wade. He wants to get a little O-line perspective from you. It is Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Ocho wants to know, how challenging is it switching from offensive tackle from one side to the other? As far as physically and muscle memory, if you're going from, say, right tackle to left tackle, how hard is that?
I think it depends on the guy for the most part. More guys than not, it's very, very difficult to switch from one side to another. But there are certain guys that have the ability to go, you know, left to right, and it's not a big deal, or right to left. And a lot of times it has to do out of necessity. Like, if you're a person that, in order to keep a job in the NFL, you better know how to play the right side and the left side, you figure it out. You know what I mean? But if you're a guy that say, I'm a premier left tackle and that's what I want to be and that's all I'm going to do, that's all you're going to focus your energy on and make it happen. So a lot of it has to do with that. But for the most part, you don't want to have guys moving around if it's not necessary. You want guys to be – and you want them to excel in one specific spot because that's when you're going to get the best out of them. I didn't have my best years of my career until I settled in at the left guard spot and played that exclusively for 4 straight years, you know. But I played every position on the line, but a lot of that had to do with necessity. Like, if I wanted to be the 6th guy on the offensive line or the 7th guy on the offensive line, I wanted to dress out on Sundays, I better know how to play right side, left side. I better know how to snap the ball. And so out of necessity, I learned all those things. But you figure out, you know, what's my best spot. You know, left guard is my best spot. And so that's where I have my most success.
713-572-4610 if you want to get a question in. 3687 or 3867 wants to know. Don't sit on the fence on this either, Wade. Who's your favorite teammate of all time and why?
My favorite teammate of all time.
Yes.
I'll give
no,
you
No, don't give
two.
Me no list. I don't want a
I'm
list.
I'm giving you two. I'm going to
no,
give you two.
No, I don't want
two.
I want one.
Two's good.
No,
two's
I'm
going
to give you two. I'm going to give you one guy that I looked up to and one guy that I thought I helped along.
There you go.
The guy I looked up to was Brian Waters. That was my favorite teammate until I got to Houston. So Brian Waters, offensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs. That dude was, he went to the Pro Bowl, it seemed like, every damn year. Talk about a guy to model your game after. He was that guy, and then he was cool. I was about to cuss. I cut myself because I started talking about my boy. He was just a good dude off the field as well. And so Brian Waters, and then the guy that I say that came up a little bit after me was Dwayne Brown. So those two guys, I would say, would be my two favorite teammates. The funniest teammate of all time was definitely Antoine Caldwell, though.
Okay.
Hands down, it's easy money, the funniest teammate of all time.
Walter Payton Award winner Brian Waters in 2009, 7-time Pro Bowls. Boy, you're right about him, man. What a career he
John
had.
Lopez, just with the facts.
Yeah, we got facts. We're spitting fire here.
Hit him with the wiki, baby.
Hit him with the wiki. One said, here's a question from 3867. If Wade were the Texans offensive coordinator, what changes would he make?
I would figure out what Deshaun Watson does best, and we do that all the time. Like, in other words, like, with the game plan offense, I'm not a fan of that. Y'all know that.
Yeah.
That's just not my deal. I have the idea of, hey, we are who we are. We're gonna figure out what we do best, and we're gonna perfect that. We're gonna have counter punches to whatever you do to try to stop what we do. But you're gonna come into the game, you're gonna know, all right, if we don't stop this, we're going to get run through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great feeling to be. I think Sean Pendergast and them just redid the 2010 game against the Indianapolis Colts, where we just lined up and beat them up. And that was kind of the coming out party for the Houston Texans offensive line. Like, hey, these dudes is real. And for the entire time I was here, that was kind of the thought process. You can't stop the run. You can't stop Arian Foster. It's going to be a long day at the office. They're going to play action you off of that. That's just what we did. So I would have an identity for sure. And Deshaun Watson's legs would be utilized way more if I was the offensive coordinator. But that would probably be the two biggest things. Like, the game plan offense, I'm not a fan of that at all. And we've used Deshaun Watson's legs much more to our advantage, because you can dictate the defenses and keep them on their heels, and that's what you want to do, I think, as offensive coordinator.
6854 wants to know, who's your least favorite coach that you ever played for?
The least favorite? I'm not a fan of coaches that aren't good coaches and don't know what they're talking about. And so I'm not going to call any names out, but there's a couple of coaches that I came across where I was like, dude is here because he's friends with,
mm-hmm.
This coach or whatever. And so I don't really have respect for him. So I'm not going to call anybody out specifically,
what?
But there's a few coaches that I came across that I just feel like they didn't know what they were talking about, and they couldn't garner respect in the locker room.
What was your best maximum bench press, and when was it?
Man, I don't even maximum big bench press, maybe like 370 or something like that. And I don't know when I did that. You know what I mean? I wasn't a big bench guy. I was more of a squat guy. And
how many 40-yard dashes have you run in your life for time? Because I don't think people realize football players really don't run 40s that often.
Nah, man. I mean, you run it for the combine to get you some money, and then that's it. You don't run anymore. You run 40. I mean, that's literally what it is. Like, my 10 time was probably in the 99th percentile. That got me paid. Not the 40 times. I'm an offensive lineman. 10 time. Like, I think I had like a 1.69 or 1.6 something split. Ridiculously fast. That's what jumps you up from the 7th round to the 3rd round, amongst other things. But, that the whole idea of running 40s, it's just kind of a standard that they put out there that they use, but guys don't run 40s anymore after they get done doing that test. That combine testing is like its own deal, its own entity, and then you never do that stuff ever again.
All right, Wade, we'll get you the definition of white unicorn here. Before we get that, real quick, what was the song that you listened to get you fired up?
Oh, it's a bunch of them, bro. Like, so Gucci Mane has a song called 24 Hours.
Yeah,
right?
I'm on 24 Hours. No.
Yeah, so yeah. That song, it, every single game in that locker room before I came out at NRG, back then Reliant, that song played every single time. And then they got this new song out right now. Like, I'm going to give you a new song right now that if I was still playing, this song for sure would be in my playlist. But Future has a new song out. What's the dang song? Hold on. I got to look at my phone.
Future?
I can't. Future has a song
out. Shout out to my 12 baby mamas, I think is what it's called.
And the song switches half. Somebody on the text line to help me out. But the song switches like a minute and a half into the song. And when the beat switches, I promise you, when I heard that song, I was ready to hit somebody in the mouth like right then and there.
Is it Life like, is that Good? Song is,
it's pretty violent.
No, dog. Come on. We're talking about violence. This song is violent. Like violent. You want to physically harm someone when you hear this song. It's like song 4 on his new album. I just can't think of the name of it off the top. Riding Strikers. That's the name of it.
There we go.
Y'all listen to the song Riding Strikers.
All right, we got to get
song
you.
Right now, if I was playing out, it would be on my playlist.
Here's the white unicorn definition, if you didn't know, from Show and Clint. They're going to be on in 30 minutes. Here it is right here. We need to get a quick reaction from you after we hear this, Wade.
You're the white unicorn, Clint.
I got to be the old white unicorn. I can't slide down and be.
Clint, you don't know what the white unicorn is, do you? I think it's about 75 of y'all on this earth. And you're one of them. The white unicorn, you all are like panda bears or polar bears, almost extinct.
Pandas, polars, and unicorns. Yeah, I don't know where this pandas is going, but I'm here. I'm here for
See,
it.
See, the white unicorn is the white guy who has the ability to pull. And when I say pull, I mean like date, to be able to date white women who have exclusively dated black guys before that.
Oh, the one to pull them back, huh?
That's what he's talking about. Clint is one of white 75. So that's the white unicorn definition that Show is trademarked.
So I'm going to be honest with you. There is a lot of white girls that mess with black dudes at a very young age and then went back to white dudes and married them and have families, and you would never know it. That happens way more often than 75 times than what Show is talking about. But, yeah, that whole idea of the white unicorn, I'd never heard of that before. Learn something new every day. But yeah. Clint Sterner could pull whoever. He's a happily – I'm not engaged guy now. But he's
Are you kind of surprised his girl was into 50 Cent, though?
No.
You've met her.
Well, I mean, first of all, she's younger. She's pretty young. 50 Cent, she was probably, when that club came out, she was probably in elementary school and loved that song. You know what I mean?
In the club. Yeah, I mean, it was a jam. I mean, Get Rich or Die Trying is an underrated album.
50 Cent is pop. 50 Cent, everybody listen to 50 Cent.
Exactly.
The people's grannies and babies listen to 50 Cent.
Well, I think it was more like an attraction thing. I think that was what he was getting at.
Oh, she's saying she likes it.
Yeah.
Liked him.
Not the music.
I thought you were talking about his music.
No, I liked him. Like Chelsea Handler liked him.
No, I can tell you for a fact, every white girl was down with every white girl was down with the song in the club. I can promise you that. Wade, it's always a pleasure, man. We appreciate you.
It's always real, fellas.
All right, let's sprint into the weekend. We're about to get 3 straight sleep-ins. Cannot wait. Let's put a bow on it. Let's try to solve some mystery. Let's try to solve some problems here on In the Loop next. Curious case of El Guapo. Texans offered Carlos Hyde, according to Aaron Wilson, 2 years, $10 million. He's still on the market. Looks like he's headed towards a minimum incentive heavy deal, and he might not even be a starter. This is tangible proof that the Texans might not have a full grasp of the market, John Lopez. There's a lot of moves to cuss and discuss. They're going to play out over time. But the curious case of El Guapo, which you can read at Sports Radio 610, is tangible proof of the Texans misjudging the market.
You can point, so if you had the opinion before, keep that going, Figgy. I'm in a Friday move, man. Just keep that thing going on. That's one of the bands. I'll get to that in a second, too. But you can have the opinion all you want, right? I think Bill O'Brien is overpaying. He's misjudging the market. You can point to David Johnson. Maybe he did it there. You can point to, obviously, you know, Eric Murray. Maybe he did it there. You can do it to other players. But you don't really have, like, a compare and contrast. Well, now you got the compare and contrast. You know, he paid that for David Johnson, offered Carlos Hyde 2 years, $10 million, and then everybody else, 31 other teams, have a chance to get close to that, and no one's even getting above, so far anyway, the NFL veterans minimum. So that shows you right there that the market says that it's less than what you offered, so Bill O'Brien is paying more.
It also shows to me a lack of patience. It's one thing to not be patient with Jadeveon Clowney and not let him, you know, not let the franchise tag process play out. It's another thing with DeAndre Hopkins. Obviously, these are on higher levels, but if you like Carlos Hyde enough to offer him way above market value to be your starting running back, why punt on that? It makes me feel like David Johnson was maybe a backup plan. Because if you like David Johnson that much, I mean, I linked it in the story at sportsradio610.com. I mean, there were stories all over the place about him, his days in Arizona being numbered. They traded for Kenyon Drake, and David Johnson was basically benched, and he had two guys in front of him that were performing at a higher level. So if you like David Johnson this much, then it would have been something that you could have forecasted and known was a possibility. So because Hyde rejects that deal, you then bring in David Johnson. Now, it's clearly not because you were surprised that he would be available, because anyone knew that. Like, any Jamoke in Arizona knew that. Like, even someone who just casually watches the Arizona Cardinals knew that with that contract and with everything going on in front of him on the depth chart, he was gone. So you didn't know that. So did they then just all of a sudden fall in love with David Johnson so much that they were willing to take on that $10 million that most people, most NFL experts think that Arizona probably should have had to pay a little bit of the $10 million that David Johnson's going to make next year? It's weird. It almost seems like there's just not a method to this madness. Like, if Bill O'Brien would have told me, and he would have told you, and he would have told all the listeners, I love David Johnson at the end of last year. When it looked like he was going to be available at the end of last year, I looked at David Johnson. I said, you know what? That guy can really work in our system behind this offensive line, and I'm a fan of David Johnson. If he told me that, I could get on board with that. I mean, I think it would be a little bit outlandish,
right?
But at least you know he liked him enough to make that move and invest what he did in him. But the fact that he offered Carlos Hyde first, and then they made this investment in David Johnson, just seems kind of wacky to me. It seems kind of all over the place, from a misevaluation process, and then a lack of patience, and then a willingness to pay significant money for a guy who was clearly not your first choice.
Well, Bill O'Brien didn't go into this deal saying, I got to have David Johnson. And I don't know any coach that would at this point in David Johnson's career. Now, after 2014, 15, whatever year it was, that's a different story. But nobody goes into a deal with David Johnson saying, I've got to have David Johnson. He went in saying, I've got to find a way to dump DeAndre Hopkins. And I'm sure he talked.
Upset a lot of people with that claim. You're going to upset a lot of people.
No. You know how I feel about DeAndre Hopkins.
No. I'm saying that, I think you're right.
I mean, does anybody doubt that? Is there anybody seriously that thinks that they didn't try to just dump DeAndre Hopkins? Because this is a dump deal. I mean.
Well, I mean, they did take back $10 million. You're laughing.
I know.
They took back one of the five highest paid running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, they did.
Who wasn't even their first choice.
Correct. But that's my point. So this was I got to get rid of DeAndre Hopkins. And wasn't I got to get David Johnson. So when you start a deal with, I've got to get rid of this player, in this case, DeAndre Hopkins, you're looking at the market and trying to find, okay, what do I like? You know, you're shopping.
Well, they said this was their best offer. They said this was the best offer.
Well, okay. But you're standing there with your arms crossed in the grocery store, trying to decide between Fruit Loops and Fruity Pebbles, and
maybe, gotta go with the Loops,
and maybe Honeycomb, and maybe Frosted Flakes, and so there are multiple teams that you're talking to, and you're like, you know what, of all those, I think I'm gonna go Fruit Loops, because it might not be a better, it costs the same as the others, and in this case, I don't think anybody gave them any more of a better offer than David Johnson in that, so you're just like, okay, well, I guess I like that this guy the best. It wasn't like they had to go get him. They just liked him the best of their options.
The other thing is, like, if Carlos Hyde accepts this deal, what happens? Like, you're talking about they wanted to dump DeAndre Hopkins. Do they dump him? Do they get more draft compensation? Like, could Carlos Hyde signing this deal have changed things in a favorable position for the Houston Texans, in that you have a running back who you know has had success behind this offensive line? He's familiar with your system. You have that. You might have overpaid him. Well, you did, because the market has shown that. But you have that. But you're now not going to overpay David Johnson. So you might have, a few million dollars extra to go with. And maybe the DeAndre Hopkins trade leads to more draft compensation. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not even going to entertain the possibility of them getting a first-round pick because they clearly, regardless of what the market value has been for receivers in the past, they clearly weren't even in that same ballpark. I mean, do you get a second, third, and the fourth swap? Do you get a second, third, and maybe a fifth or something? Like, what would have been the draft compensation? Because I'll ask you. I'll give you choices right now. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have Carlos Hyde back for the 2 years, $10 million, and we don't know how it would have been laid out.
Yeah.
And DeAndre Hopkins traded to Arizona for a second, a third, the fourth swap, and a late draft pick? Or would you rather have what actually happened in the trade they made where they took back David Johnson?
Oh, that's a layup, man. Yeah, that's the draft picks and certainly, Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde had one of his best seasons, you know, right here in this uniform, and they moved on from him.
Who do you think's better for this team? Are you positive David Johnson's going to be better than Hyde?
God, no.
Sorry I offended you there.
God, no.
What? All right. Carlos Hyde last year. Does David Johnson rush for more yards this year than Carlos Hyde did last year?
No.
You're not hesitating.
No.
You're freaking me out.
No. I'm not saying he's not going to have more yards from scrimmage. I'm saying he's not going to rush for more yards than Carlos Hyde.
That's a problem.
Of course it is. I've been saying this from the day March 16th, 2020. We started on this show. We got the news of the trade on this show. All right? And I've been saying from that moment that David Johnson was not going to be able to rush the ball like he had in that 2016 season. It's just not going to happen.
Man, I hope you're wrong.
He had 345 yards last year and got benched.
But
Hyde had 1,000.
The thing that's for me for this is if you have the sixth most money invested in the offensive line and you have these five returning starters, you have to be able to tote that damn rock. Like, this can't be finesse.
Right.
You have to be able to tote that damn rock. So I'll take the over. I'll say David Johnson has over yard, over
more than 1,000.
Yes.
Would you care to make it interesting?
I'll do it. All right. What do you want to bet? Let's just bet a dinner.
All right. Dinner.
All right. Dinner.
Dinner.
A dinner.
You're saying David Johnson had more than 1,000 yards rushing.
More yards than Carlos Hyde had last year, yes. I'll
rushing.
Go with it. Yes. Yes.
Have you lost your sense of smell?
It's not a ton.
You lost your sense of taste?
It's like 65 yards a game.
A little fever working? Do I need to put my mask back on?
It's a good offensive line he's running behind.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good offensive line.
Wasn't bad in Arizona either.
Well, for him it was. Kenyon Drake didn't seem to have a problem running behind it, and neither did Allen Edmonds, but it's neither here nor there. Let's go back to the day that trade was made, because, my gosh, that was just hilarious when you look back at it. Let's start. This is four parts of that trade, and we didn't plan on doing this originally. It just kind of happened that way.
Well, keep in mind, there was no heads up that this trade was going to happen. This was like on the fly radio.
And it was 100% just straight off the dome, raw reaction.
It happened during our show
immediately. And I mean, this was pre-pandemic, so we were hearing whispers about that. So there was a lot of stuff going on. We actually started shortly after that, broadcasting from home.
Right. I think the end of that week.
Yeah, it's crazy to look back. This was our reaction when the news first broke that David Johnson would be coming to the Houston Texans. We didn't know the specifics. We made assumptions that maybe some of the money was going to be paid by Arizona. My God, were we wrong. Houston Texans are acquiring David Johnson from the Cardinals. I wouldn't be surprised if the Texans weren't getting a draft pick back from the Cardinals for David Johnson. So you're either going to have the Arizona Cardinals likely paying some of the salary for David Johnson, or I don't think it'll be Brock Osweiler-like where you're getting a second-round pick.
The Texans want draft equity.
David Johnson had a very bad contract with the Arizona Cardinals. He's had some all-pro-type seasons, or a season.
A season.
And I would be surprised if the Texans really had to give up anything in order to get David Johnson.
I think they're going to eat some of his salary and get a draft pick because his salary cap hit was significant. Keep this in mind too, Landry. We don't know the terms yet. We're going to find those out here, I'm sure, pretty soon.
Right.
Oh my gosh, were we wrong?
Reaction.
No, we should have been right.
We should have been.
But we were wrong.
And we had no idea what was coming next. Here is more from March 16th as this story began to shape up. This is per Adam Schefter. DeAndre Hopkins is going to Arizona as part of the David Johnson deal. John Lopez, you look sick to your stomach. Talk to me, please. I am in shock. I am in shock. I'm shaking. And I am in shock.
I wish
shock
we had
a live
beep button because that was the first thought that came. What the? What's going on? What's going on here? Hey, nothing like that live reaction.
All right, so the story continues. Here is more reaction as we continue to gather the facts of the new Hopkins trade on March 16th.
You just traded DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals. You got David Johnson back, and you're paying him $16 million. What the hell are you thinking?
There's got to be a first-round pick involved. I will say that.
I don't care.
I'm just telling you.
You can give me two first-round picks at this point.
There's going to be a first-round pick involved in this trade. That's the one thing I can promise you. There will be a first-round pick. There has to be, John.
I don't care. This is Bill O'Brien fumbling. This is horrible for the Houston Texans.
John, it's the snowball effect of the Tunsil trade. You've been defending the Tunsil trade, and now all of a sudden you're trading DeAndre Hopkins. We think for draft picks. Hell, with the way things are going right now, it might be 5 minutes, and all of a sudden we're talking about it's just a straight-up trade or something like that.
This is. I mean, I don't know how to put it. You hate to go personal on a guy, but this is just stupid. I mean, you can do whatever you want. John McClain now. Houston Texans breaking news.
Wow. All right, so the news breaks. We get the official details of the trade. John Lopez is already heated. I'm confused because I thought that they were either getting a draft pick and salary relief for David Johnson. I didn't assume they were getting that top 10 pick. Like, I was thinking Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, okay, so you're going to have CeeDee Lamb here. This is our reaction on March 16th when the details emerged of what the Texans got for new Hopkins.
Are these all mock accounts? This is the trade that John McClain is reporting now. DeAndre Hopkins and a fourth round pick go to the Cardinals for David Johnson and a second round pick this year and a fourth round pick next year. I'm sorry, man. This is just dumb. DeAndre Hopkins and a fourth round pick go to the Cardinals for David Johnson and a second this year and a fourth next year. That's the trade. Somebody please tell me how you got better. That's the deal. I've seen a lot of weird stuff in this town over the last 31 years. I've seen a lot of general managers stumble all over themselves. Hell, I've seen a general manager moon a wedding party at a hotel, and I haven't seen anybody show their ass like this.
Man.
I forgot I said that.
We look back at this. That was over 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we play that, I go right back to that place.
Oh, you get angry all over again.
I just get confused. Mm-hmm. I just get really confused.
Hadn't gotten any better. I mean, the trade has not improved over time.
Man.
Why are you reopening these wounds? Somebody texted. God, please stop. I'm crying.
I'm really kind of shook. Ah, man.
Yeah.
The first cut was probably the craziest one.
Yeah, because we thought that they were getting back. I compared it to the Brock Osweiler deal.
They paid the salary.
I compared it to the Brock Osweiler deal, where you got a draft pick to take the contract.
And we were thinking two first-round picks.
That's got to be the craziest 20 minutes that we've experienced.
Oh, that was hectic.
We didn't come into work thinking that DeAndre Hopkins was going to get traded.
No, those were like far away rumors. You know, they might be thinking about moving. You remember?
Yeah.
But nobody thought it was
going to happen. Well, we were talking about the rumors.
Yeah, we were talking about
the rumors. And we actually said Brandon Cooks would be a guy that maybe they like.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, Brandon Cooks for DeAndre Hopkins? He can't hold his jock, Landry. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
I agree, but, but I mean, in an indirect way, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah.
J-Lo. What were you? What are you going to be listening to on the boat this weekend?
I actually am not going to go out on boat this weekend.
Too many people out there.
Thank you for setting me up for that, though. Because shout out to my oldest son, the disowned son, We are going to have a virtual graduation tomorrow afternoon. He got his MBA from one of the top 10 business schools in the country. That would be the University of Texas at Austin.
There you go.
So he's going to be graduating virtually. We're going to have a nice dinner, just the family. And then maybe Sunday I'll go out. But as of now, today and tomorrow, we're just going to be focused on doing that. So how about that? He got his MBA from UT and obviously he's going to wear maroon.
You're kind of like a hardcore party boy when it comes to Memorial Day.
I love holidays.
You like the holiday, but you fish all the time.
Yeah.
Memorial Day is for the amateurs.
It's exactly right.
It's
too
like,
many boats on the
it's
water.
Like a party dude on New Year's. You don't want to be out there with the amateurs a lot of the times.
That's
a lot
exactly
of times you
right.
do it, but you just let the jamokes be jamokes.
Go let them mess up their boats for a while and jam up the bays. I'll be chilling and I'll be out there Sunday or Monday or next week.
There you go.
Yeah.
How about you? I'm just going to get 3 sleep-ins. I'm going to go for at least 12 miles of solid pace.
Not a baby.
My goal is 12 miles of solid pace, gallons of water, and just a healthy cleanse this weekend.
Well, you guys have a healthy and happy.
Maybe a little bit of
Memorial Day. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it just depends. Putting me out there, Figgy. Figgy, yeah. What do you got going on?
I'm chilling. I might juice today.
There you go. Juice.
Not a girl.
You going on steroids?
Yeah.
No.
I said girl, boy. Not a boy.
Yeah. Okay.
I think he was looking at Bridget.
Get on that juice.
Oh, is Bridget in there?
Yeah.
What's up, Bridget?
What's up? Yeah. How you doing? Bridget's going to hold it down for Clinton's show. For Wade Smith, thank you very much for joining us. For Figgy Fig, being the best in the world at what he do. For the OG John Lopez, I'm Landry Locker. Guess what? Tuesday, when we're back,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be our 500th show together. 500.
Get out.
500. We'll talk to you then. 500 episodes. That's 500,000. Clinton's show are next.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.